listener production.
Mark Brandon Chopper Reed used to tell me that one day he'd be more famous than Ned Kelly, Australia's greatest outlaw. And today it's fair to say that Chopper is bigger than Ned. However, he was a friend of mine for more than a decade, and the Mark Reed that I knew was a dismal failure as a crook. But as Chopper, he persuaded a nation he was a criminal genius. In this two-part series, we're going to separate the man from the myth he created. For his fans and even some of his detractors, this may not be easy listening, but they're going to meet the real Chopper for the first time. And I'm here to say, he punked you all. In 1991, while in Pentridge Prison in Melbourne, Victoria, Reed wrote a book, Chopper from the Inside. It was an instant bestseller, but the story was 80% fiction, to be charitable. He portrayed Chopper as a kind of hero, a standover man who served up vigilante justice on drug dealers and child molesters. He was articulate, funny, ultra-violent, and at times completely unhinged. He had his ears cut off in jail just to beat the system. In 2000, the book became a movie, Chopper, starring Eric Banner, and the character was burnished into Australian culture. In the film, Chopper is asked by a reporter to describe himself.
Just a bloke. Just a good bloke down on his luck.
You've written a bestseller.
Yeah, I know. And I can't even bloody spell.
For the rest of his life, Mark Reed earned a living from playing the character that people saw on the screen. In 2014, I wrote a book called The Real Chopper, published by Penguin Books. I discovered the reality was very different. It was easier being Chopper and profitable, but in the end, he was trapped in it.
Entire first print. 3,000 copies sold.
No.
Except for the ones that got shoplifted. A printing, a double for the next run.
Dad. We're going to be rich.
From a bloody book. Can you believe it? It's going to be raining bloody cash!
The Nine Network Australia's new series, Underbelly Files Chopper, goes into this less explored territory of Reed's life in two telly movies. I caught up with Aaron Jeffrey, who played the lead in the show.
When I watched it, I thought to myself, Aaron here is another person playing Chopper. The first one was Mark Brandon Reed.
That's right. That's right. I don't think that he ever imagined that what he created would end up being so steeply embedded in the Australian psyche, like a modern-day Ned Kelly. You couldn't have foreseen that then, but that's what's happened. But really, you know, my research of the character I was playing, when this character was brutalised as a child, then you have... intimacy equals death. Fright and flight is total annihilation of the soul. Chopper was created to survive. And then as we get older in life, those strategies no longer serve you.
Hey, your name's Chopper. I suppose that's some smart ass's idea of being ironic.
Aaron Jeffrey raises an interesting point. How would Reed survive without being Chopper? After serving 23 years in jail, all he had were his stories, even if they weren't true. I'm going to talk to a couple of Mark Reed's former managers, whose job it was to turn those myths into money. Let's go back to 2004. A wine merchant named Andrew Roper was sitting in a Qantas business lounge in Perth waiting for a flight back to Melbourne. Chopper Reed was sitting near him with his then manager, a former AFL player turned actor Mark Jacko Jackson. Chopper and Jacko had been performing spoken word shows across the country, but Roper had never heard of them until that moment.
I was sitting next to these two guys, larger than life, and I noticed people were coming up all the time asking for their autographs. And so I realised I was reading a book on wine at the time. And then the Sydney flight left and Mark Jacko went. And there was me and Chopper sitting there next to each other. So separate tables, but just next to each other. So I just asked him a question. I asked him, who just observed that he is obviously famous. And then We just started talking. Our flight was delayed for a couple of hours, so we got very drunk.
He was a guy who was looking for opportunities, looking for ways to, I guess, move into the straight world.
Mm. Mm. Exactly. I think he thought I was pretty upper class in the sense of in a different platter altogether from where he was. But he did say to me that he's always been fascinated by wine, and it was always out of his kind of understanding reach and didn't quite understand what all the fuss was about. But he did like it. And then he wanted to know. He wanted to know all about it.
It was the beginning of a partnership between Reed and Roper that lasted 4 years.
The day after we landed from Perth, I was in East Melbourne, and it was a cold winter day, and there was a knock at the door.
He just turned up,
yeah, because I'd given him my details of where I was and whatever. And then he was really serious about doing some business deal with me. We didn't talk about management or anything at that time. It was just purely about the wine, because I suggested to him, I said, with his fame, he should be, you know, doing a chopper red or something, you know. So he liked that idea. So we went down to a winery in the Goulburn Valley and hand-selected some wines. This is over the next couple of weeks. And we created a wine label, which he did the artwork for. He did three drawings, which we used for the label. And the art was quite interesting. You know, it was a typical Ned Kelly with breasts, you know.
Who doesn't like that?
Yeah, well, exactly.
So yeah. I guess in those moments, you were seeing the potential of this guy. He was
absolutely.
He was a unique character who had something to offer.
Absolutely. And I realised too, you know, after a couple of weeks of being with him, you know, a bit here and there, he was quite an intelligent character. He was not any thug by any means. You know, he talked sensibly. He was quite serious about things, you know, about life. His views on life were quite profound, you know, political and everything else. He had his comments, you know, he had his thoughts.
And yet, even at that stage, he was being typecast into the chopper in the movie, the wisecracking, violent kind of buffoon, if you like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And yet you were seeing that Mark Reed was a bit different.
Absolutely he was. Absolutely. And his passion was really, wasn't the wine as such. It was actually his longingness to be involved in a company. We set up a business and called it Reed and Jackson Fine Wine Company. But at the end of the day, he was so proud when we got the ASIC register and the book in from my accountant and stuff to see his name as a director on a ASIC register.
And he had the company stamp, which he loved, I believe.
The company stamp, he loved it. He would not let that go. He used it everywhere. He used it as his damn signature. It was like, it was hilarious.
The Chopper Wine was launched at Sexpo, an adult entertainment event in Melbourne.
People were queuing up to take a photo. So I said to Mark, I said, well, we've got to convert this into coin. We went out and bought a Polaroid camera and we said, all right, if you want a photo, it's going to cost you $20. And the
queue, $20.
Yeah, and the queue didn't dissipate. The queue
is that
was,
right?
Yeah, $20 plus we'd, you know, try and flog him some wine as well at the same time, you know.
I did a joint book signing with him once for a book I'd put out, and he had one of his books there as well. And like I had like about two people, he had like 3,000.
That's right.
He said, "You made a mistake, right? You're a serious journalist. I'm a freak show. All right, they'll always turn up for the freak
right.
show." I said,
that's
"Okay,
right. that's
good
right.
advice."
That's very good.
Yeah. But yeah, the Reed Jackson Fine Wine Company came to a horrible, horrible end.
The wine was attached to Mark appearing at the store, so we would schedule dates for the appearance for Mark there, and there were queues down the street. In the car, we were delivering some wine to Sutherland Fine Wines in Victoria Street in Collingwood. And Jacko was in the back seat, Mark was in the front, I was driving. We pulled up out the front, the boot was full of wine, we had 10 boxes of wine that they bought. And Jacko just said a comment in the back saying, "Oh, I don't want to be lifting wine into shops. I didn't sign on for this. You know, you should be doing that, Andrew. You know." Anyway, we loaded the wine into the shop and came back in the car. Mark was fuming. He was furious. So we got in the car and there was an almighty argument in the car, which I had to get out because it was got really quite heated. And Mark was in the front seat and he was wanting to tear his throat out, basically. And Jacko was there in the back seat, you know, arguing back and yelling. And so I got out and walked, just stood down the road a bit, let him go, two massive egos going for it in the car. And then Mark called me back in the car. He said, I want you to witness the sacking of Jacko. So I had to sit in the car and witness the sacking of Jacko. And Jacko got out and ran down the road, walked down the road.
Upset.
Very upset. In fact, he was crying, I think. Yeah.
So at that moment, you became Mark Reed's manager.
That's right, at that time, yeah.
Did you have a business plan?
No, not really. It was a day to day or an hour to hour type of experience, you know.
Roper's mission was to get Chopper's name on as many products as possible. First, there was the beer, Chopper Heavy. And yeah. I remember Mark coming to my house one day for a barbecue with about a dozen bottles of it under his arm. Right. And I'll never forget the label. It was like 6% or something, wasn't it? And it was guaranteed to get your ears off.
Guaranteed to get your ears off. That was a phrase I used on it. Yeah.
So, that was your line, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There were also Chopper's Nuts to go with Chopper Heavy. And they even sold Chopper's tats, made famous in the movie. Roper contacted a temporary tattoo maker in South Australia.
I rang him up and I said, do you ever get asked for Mark Chopper Reed tattoos? And he goes, do I what? You know, I get asked every day for them, you know. It's like people emailing me all over the place saying, can we get Chopper tattoos?
Roper asked his wife to draw Reed's tattoos freehand for the designs.
Mark took his shirt off and she started in his back and there was this gun handle sticking out the bottom of his back of his jeans. So she's just down tools and said, nah, not in my house. Out you go. So he went out and then he put the gun in the bin out the front. And then he came back in and he said, look, in future, he said, any time I come around, I'll leave my gun in the bin out the front. So good. I said, oh, that's nice.
We got a four-year-old in Collingwood, and he said to me, he said, how many people have you killed, Daddy? And I said, oh, I haven't killed nearly as many people as people imagine, right? And then I thought about it. I said, how many people have I really killed? And four. I've actually killed four or seven, depending on how you look at it. I mean, because I was helped out with about three of them, right? And if you're being helped out, you've got helpers. You can't blame yourself for killing those other three altogether, right? But I'll kill four on my own personally.
Away from Melbourne, Chopper could relax and leave his gun at home. Roper organised the Chopper Heavy Tour of Queensland to support the beer and a deal he'd struck with a ringtones company. The money was rolling in and Mark had his freedom.
What happened when I was in jail was the Advocate Gang War lasted 5 years, right? Now, they started the Advocate Gang War because they accused me of eating the Christmas sausage.
I'd pick him up all the time from his house and it was like a breath of fresh air for him. He was free. He was out in the road. He was, you know, he got all excited. He was like a kid in the candy shop when we got on the plane, you know, going to somewhere. He was just really relaxed and enjoying life. You know, especially when he had a purpose, like a legitimate purpose. We were going to do something to, you know, for the next couple of weeks, we're going to have fun and earn some money. We'd go into a servo to fill up the Tarago and didn't matter which town in Australia, he was that recognisable. There were swarms of people would come out of the woodwork, you know, and want his autograph and talk to him. And
so you'd come into town for these shows, and I think one of the big parts of the night was the memorabilia auction, and I believe you'd swoop into the local Bunnings and pick up all the.
Oh, that was hilarious! We'd drive into town, and we'd go into a Bunnings, and I'd go up to the manager and just say, look, you know, we're going to buy all your little your hatchets and all your axes. So we'd do a deal and walk out with a lot, you know, and have these guys loading these axes into the boot of the Tarago and you know, getting Chopper to sign stuff on the way. But you know, they loved him, you know.
So what was the markup on a signed Chopper hatchet?
Oh, huge. A hatchet would go, especially Mount Isa was the big one. We had a auction there. I think they were going for about $600 or $700 each, you know, and all he'd do is just sign the signed the wooden handle.
A comedian, Pommy Johnson, would warm up the crowd and then Chopper would launch straight into his war stories.
This is a story I tell the police, this is a story I tell the Supreme Court, this is a story I'm telling you, and this is a story I'm sticking to, right?
Now, how much would be truth, do you think?
Well, Mark would always tell me, it would always be 80-20, and then you'd say, which one's which? And he'd go, well, take your pick, you know. So he was that mystical about it, but it was always 20% truth would be fair to say, I'd say.
He felt the crowd wanted those stories, and the fictional stories, really, more than the truth.
Absolutely. Yeah, they wanted the fiction. They based a lot of their interest and intrigue on the movie. Of course.
They wanted Eric Banner.
They did. Basically, that's true.
There were moments of farce, like when Roper booked Chopper in Mackay in a hotel full of bikies.
We happened upon that weekend to be a reunion of a famous bikie war that happened up there between the Odin's warriors and the rebels. Mark got a bit, he was a bit concerned about it. He, you know, especially with the rebels type of thing, he didn't like the rebels that much. We were standing at the back of the stage in this club in Mackay, and it was we were working out our escape route, basically.
Mark, Mackay?
Well, a good night was had by all. we beat a hasty retreat out of Mackay.
Why did we have to go out?
We got the fuck out of Dodge.
Why did we have to get out quickly?
Because Odin's warriors were there.
They were.
And they were planning fucking...
Evil thoughts
in our direction.
They were.
Paranoia of the locals.
Ah, weren't they paranoid?
Yeah.
Anyway. And I believe there was a comment from Andrew Roper as well. What was that?
Andrew Roper. This is the quote of Andrew Roper. I think this place is some sort of trouble spot. Some sort of trouble spot.
Roper's footage also shows Reed's work ethic.
But if employees let me in, let's Mark wait here.
And up at dawn for media interviews.
Let me in, hot FM.
And coming in after 7 o'clock, very special guest, Mark Chopper Reed, joining us in the studio.
AKA Uncle Chop Chop.
But right now, this morning, we're having a chat about what have you had stolen?
Mark was living the dream as Chopper on the road, but at home, his problems were waiting. In the first year alone, Chopper earned $200,000, but he was spending even faster.
He would help anyone out that he could, especially the old crims that he was that were doing it tough, you know, out of prison. He'd have a list of their names, and you know, they hit him up all the time for rent and things they couldn't pay and stuff. But it was basically after every show, the Queensland tour, for instance, it was. The next morning was spent visiting banks to deposit cash into these guys' accounts, as well as buying himself a brand new big gold chain, you know. He racked up bills galore. And he'd get a credit card and then sent to his home, of course, and then he'd go out and spend the limit that day.
Roper discovered his client was a regular user of heroin and speed. He found himself managing Mark Reed's addiction and keeping it secret from the public.
There was one rainy, wintry night where you saw, I guess, the rock bottom. Mm,
absolutely. Well, it was actually in North Melbourne. It was at the Comics Lounge in North Melbourne. And we did a weekly series every Tuesday night, and it was a Ask Uncle Chop. And they'd have other comedians in there, stand-up guys, and then Mark would come on and the crowd would basically ask vetted questions.
All right, well, if you had 3 wishes, what would they be and why? 3 wishes.
What would you wish for? I'd wish for my left ear back. That's 1. Your right ear back. That's 2. And you wish to have them off again? No, that'd be fucking stupid.
I'm not.
I wish I had them 20 fucking 3 years, 9 months, I didn't get in jail back again.
What would you do with
them? I fucking live them.
Where do I get a good amount of coke before it's jumped?
20th story of the Collingwood Commission, please.
I would always take him home and drop him to his door and make sure he got in. But this night he said, just drop me down the road near the hotel in Johnson Street. So I did that. About 2:30 in the morning, I get a call from Margaret, who was quite worried, and said, where's Mark? So I went and picked her up, and we went trawling the streets looking for him. And we went to a particular disused hotel in Johnson Street, and a couple of windows were open up the top, and she just stood in the street screaming, asking for him to get out and come down, and she seemed to know people in there because she was calling out different people's names and saying, you know, bring him out, you know, he's in there, and all this type of stuff. And you know, the next morning it was found that he was found basically passed out in the street.
I mean, dead.
Basically. They had to revive him in St. Vincent's, yeah. I said, well, what we should do, Mark, is get you first cleaned up into, some rehab centre, which we had organised, and he was all compliant with it. He was happy to do it. We were going to form a charity and call it the Chopper Reed Foundation. And the idea was, and we had already landmarked some places in around Collingwood and Abbotsford and Richmond to create some gyms to basically help the kids coming out of prison. And Chopper was going to be there to mentor these young kids.
I mean, this couldn't have been good for the Chopper Reed brand.
That's right. And this is where it became a problem. Margaret got wind of it. And this one particular day in my home in East Melbourne, she rang me and everyone was there. And she rang me and she screamed blue murder at me. She said, I've just found out about this charity thing, you know, it's going to ruin the whole thing. You got to stop it. I'm not going to let it happen.
Because key to that was Mark Reed going into rehab and demonstrating his frailty,
correct,
his correct, humanity.
Correct. There was a chain of what we were going to do to make this happen. And it was going to be good for him and it was going to be good for his whole life story, so to speak, you know.
So did you get a sense then of Mark being imprisoned within the Chopper Reed alter ego?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was trapped in that. And what was clearly said to me, Margaret did say to me that, we don't want the public to know that he's drug dependent, you know, because that's going to ruin everything, because half of his message was he used to bash up drug dealers and, you know, deal with the scum, basically.
But in fact, he was
addicted himself and he was a taker himself, yeah.
By 2008, everything was falling apart for Reed.
So eventually the ATO, the credit card companies, the banks all came calling.
Correct.
And the only option was bankruptcy.
That's right. Margaret called me up and we went around there and sat in her kitchen there, and they'd just renovated their house, and we sat there, I remember that day, and she had all these letters of demand. Basically said, well, you're his manager, deal with it. Yeah. So I basically tried to deal with it. And the only advice I could get was through a lawyer friend of mine, a commercial lawyer. And we went down there and me and Mark sat in his boardroom and laid it on the table and said, where do we go from here? You know, there's $80,000 worth of credit card bills. Where do we go? What do we do?
Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So there ended Mark's career as a company director as well.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. It all finished from there.
Eventually, Reed sacked Roper as his manager.
He also sent me a letter basically sacking me as his manager. I've still got that letter that day and I read it from time to time. And I just shake my head, just think, you know, what could have been. Could have been quite a good outcome. Just petered into nothing. Yeah.
In the second part of The Real Chopper, we'll follow Reed through the final years of his life, right up to the last picture show, where he made an unreliable confession to at least four murders. The producer was Sarah Grinberg. Mixing, editing and theme music by Matt Nikolic. Executive producer, Grant Tothill. This has been a Real Crime production. Written and produced by Adam Shand. Listener.